In less than a month, Southern California residents have dealt with waves of unprecedented wildfires and then the threat of mudslides and flooding. It feels like we just can't catch a break. But while the lives of those affected by the fires may feel very much up in the air, a whole host of assistance is being made available. We talked to Supervisor Lindsay Horvath, whose district encompasses the area destroyed by the Palisades fire, about the fires, the recovery, and the future. And while we've talked a lot about the human toll of those fires, the other victims are our pets. We discuss how to evacuate your pets if necessary, how to help those who are displaced, and what resources are available. Fox 11 News in Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News in Depth. And as we move into the second month of recovery from Southern California's deadly fires, we have a new threat at hand. As we record this program, we're looking at a potential days-long rainstorm. We don't know yet how the burn areas will fare, but we do know that it's vital to prepare. And crews have been scrambling to make things as secure as they possibly can. Los Angeles County Supervisor Lindsay Horvath is with us right now, kind of give us an overview of things. And why don't we start on that point? How are we preparing?
So both storms, we've been staging thousands of feet of K-rail. We've been deploying sandbags, both from a county perspective as well as providing them for our residents. There's all kinds of physical intervention wattles and silt socks that are being deployed throughout the region. And LA County is the lead through the flood control district throughout Los Angeles County. So we're doing this for incorporated cities, the unincorporated areas, and making sure that we're protecting our communities.
You know, you've heard a lot from a lot of your constituents. Your district took a major hit.
Yes.
How, I've known you a long time.
Yes,
council member,
yeah.
Mayor of West Hollywood, now supervisor. How are you dealing with this? How is this affecting you?
It's a challenge, you know, hearing people's stories. There was a town hall that sits with me. There was a family who spoke with me after the debris town hall that we did at Santa Monica College. And it was a family with two young daughters, one of whom was in middle school. And she was the first one who got to ask me a question from the family. And she said, I'm worried that when I go to sleep, when I wake up, there's going to be another fire. What are you doing to protect me? And that sits with me, you know. And at the end of the conversation, her older sister was part of her environmental club at high school. And, you know, her dad had questions about insurance and how we were supporting property owners. Her mother had questions around what we were doing to support them in their schooling. And they say, you know, we trust you. So thank you for answering our questions.
But there's a lot of weight on your shoulders.
Yes, it's that trust.
And does that affect you emotionally?
Of course, it has to. It has to. It's just, it's a very human emotion. And it comes with the responsibility of this role that I hold. But it's also incredibly meaningful to have an opportunity to be of service to people in this incredibly devastating time.
As we look at video from some of the fire activity, it's just brings it all back, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does. That first week was incredibly challenging. A lot of the fires that came up were in my district. The Woodley fire that happened in the Sepulveda Basin, the Archer fire, the Kenneth fire, the Sunset fire. There was a fire for a moment in Pacoima. Of course, the Hearst fire in Sylmar, and the entirety of the Palisades is all in my district. And when I was elected, a local council member in one of my cities shared with me that, you know, our district is the most disaster prone of any district in any county in the entire country. So that's why we got right to work doing emergency preparedness trainings throughout the district and all parts, Northeast San Fernando Valley and the Santa Monica Mountains, making sure that we were working with our community partners to help them get prepared. But these conditions are, you know, nothing. As our fire chief has said, every firefighter in the United States of America could have been there and we wouldn't have been able
I've never seen anything like it. But, you know, it's the people who lost their homes.
Yeah.
The people who are out there wherever they happen to be who are wondering, when do we get back to normal?
Yeah, well, normal will be new. It won't be what it was. But the thing that is most familiar is your community. It's the people. And so that's why I take very seriously our responsibility to make sure that we're doing all we can to be partners with community members in a rebuild process that is healthy, that is safe, and that is resilient for a 21st century reality, making sure that we have a space for everyone to be able to come back, to create those community centers that really made it feel like home. You know, when they talked about loss of structures, these weren't just, you know, structures and a data point. These are places where people had their babies and raised their families and made community. And so it's the essence of that that we have to really bring back in the rebuild.
What are some of the most urgent things you have to address, like now?
Given the rains, we're making sure that we're deploying those interventions to keep the land still to the extent that we can control that. We're working on infrastructure improvements. We know that there are communities that are still without power and utilities, and so we're working with our utility partners to safely restore all of that. But we're also working with, organizing experts on what a safe and resilient recovery actually looks like.
But when you have a jigsaw puzzle this large, mm-hmm. where do you begin?
Well, you have to listen to people, and I think that's the most important thing, is letting people know that we're listening to them and that we're answering their questions and that we can give them consistent and reliable information. I think while your world is spinning around you, you want to know what can ground you and what can keep you connected. And so making sure that we are providing vetted information to people that's consistent and reliable, that they know how to access the help that's available, that is the most critical component, communication.
And there they are. In for the long haul. They get it.
Absolutely. They understand that there's a lot of work to be done, and we are communicating that we're going to be with them every step of the way.
I want to ask you about something else, price gouging.
Yes.
You know, you have a lot of people looking for places to live and a lot of landlords who may be taking advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. We are, as a board, we have taken that issue seriously. Not only did the district attorney and our attorney general come out with penalties, but our board just stepped up the penalties in Los Angeles County to $50,000 in fines for people who are price gouging. You know, we already had an unaffordable, especially rental market, but an unaffordable housing market in Los Angeles before all of this began. So anybody who's taking advantage of people who are already suffering so much, they're going to face serious consequences.
And there's a tougher fine. We'll talk about that in a second. Lindsay Horvath with us right now. We'll continue with more Fox 11 News in depth after this break, and we'll talk with the supervisor about the devastation of the fires and mudslides and what's ahead for the county. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. Let's bring back Supervisor Lindsay Horvath. We've got more grim stuff to talk about. Much of the storm preparations that, you know, are going into effect right now are anticipating the possibility of several days of rain. But we're going to have more rain after that. So how are we going forward dealing with these issues of dry ground, wet water, mud?
So in the immediate, we've deployed a lot of physical interventions, but in the long term, we're also looking about our infrastructure countywide. And one of the things that I did when I became chair of the board last year, the very first action that we took was to adopt a countywide water plan to look at our resiliency and our water future for all of Los Angeles County. There are 88 cities in the county, but there are more than 200 water agencies. And so if we're going to get serious about how we're handling water and making sure we have it available for clean drinking water, as well as to fight fires and everything in between, we have to work together and have a coordinated plan. And so we've launched that. We've put people to work on it. I'm working hard to harness resources to fund it. But there's a lot of work ahead of us.
Well, were some of the problems surrounding reservoirs that were in disrepair?
Well, of course, that's a challenge, you know, and so the county had our facilities in working order. When you're tapping in from so many different places into those water reservoirs, for us, we even experience low pressure. We've learned from past fire experience that we have to have water redundancy. So if we had low water pressure in one area, we could bring water in from another area. Mm-hmm. But it's ultimately, you know, there was so much fire going on that we couldn't attack from an aerial perspective, especially in those those early days, it was an incredible challenge. So water infrastructure going forward is going to be a critical component, but also how we think strategically about deploying our resources and the kinds of equipment that we need.
Let's talk a little bit about roads, because we have canyon roads that have been impacted. Yes. PCH.
Yes.
Do you have any idea when PCH might be safe enough to open it up to traffic again?
So right now, so PCH was open, and now because of the rains, they have a soft closure that's limited traffic just because there's a lot going on down there. And given the weather conditions, it's out of an abundance of caution, we've taken action to limit what's going on. We hope that as the rains subside, that we'll be able to go back to some flow of traffic, but we have very strongly cautioned people. This will not be the PCH that you knew before the fires. It's going to be very slow moving, but we know cutting off access entirely has been incredibly detrimental to people rebuilding their lives, such as our kids who want to get to school. We have to let those school buses get through. So we're trying to make sure that it's essential traffic, but it's going to be a bit of time before we go to what people knew before.
And that's compounded by the canyon roads.
Well, not only that, but also all of the infrastructure repair that has to happen. So we've got, you know, your power utilities, your gas utilities, all of the road repair itself that's happening in partnership with Caltrans or state and local agencies. So there's a lot of work that's going on there.
There's an area in Topanga.
Yes.
That's become sort of an annoyance for some people, calling it toxic. Mm. It's where things are being dumped. Talk about that.
So the EPA is the lead agency on phase one of debris removal. And in order for that debris to be removed, it has to be staged somewhere. So so one site that has been identified by our state partners is the state beach at Topanga Canyon and the PCH. And so that is one location. There's another one that was just recently announced at Will Rogers Beach. And, you know, these are staging areas that have been led by our state agencies and are necessary. We've heard from our EPA partners that they need more than 20 acres to be able to stage in order to account for all of the debris that they have to accommodate. More than close to 24,000 acres burned in the Palisades fire. So there's a lot of debris that's going to have to be hauled out of this area in order for us to have both a healthy and safe recovery.
People are able to make debris requests.
Yeah, so the phase one, you don't even have to request. We'll come in and do it for you. That's the household hazardous removal, and that's led by the EPA. The second phase, you do have to make a request to opt in, and there's a right of entry form that we're encouraging people to fill out in throughout Los Angeles County. You turn that in. Hopefully, you'll choose working with the Army Corps of Engineers, and then the Army Corps will come in, take over, and work on that second phase of debris removal. You can opt out and hire private contractors. But I would caution that, you know, the Army Corps will do it free of charge, and they're working in a coordinated fashion. The more we hire private contractors into that space, the more we're having more people accessing those very narrow roads, and especially, I know you have to look at what is important for your personal property, but you also have to look at your whole community, so we can do it in a coordinated fashion.
That brings us back to the mudslides.
Yeah, there's that.
You know, because you've got the narrow roads, you've got the rain, you've got the mud. So let's just one more time talk about preparing for these mudslides that could very easily be imminent. We don't know.
Well, we have staged thousands of feet of K-rail. There's a lot of intervention that has gone in with our state and federal partners working with Los Angeles County as the lead for our flood control district. So there's a lot of work that's been going on, and we've been educating our residents about what is available to them, such as sandbags in their neighborhoods that they can deploy. But if you have questions while the rain is happening, or you have questions about how whether your property qualifies for additional consultation around flooding, you can call 1-800-675-HELP, and that takes you directly to Los Angeles County Public Works, and they'll advise you on what you should know about all of the potential mudslide impacts and impacts from the rain.
Let's have you give that number again, and is there a website as well?
1-800-675-HELP is the number to call, and you can go to recovery.lacounty.gov, and you'll find a lot of information there to support you.
You know, we could probably talk to you for an hour.
I'll come back as much as you want.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay Horvath, for being with us and keeping us posted. We would like to have you come back and update us on all that's going on. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we look at the fate of some of the most innocent victims of the wildfires, our pets. and how a local organization is mobilizing to help them. We'll be right back. Those brush fires have created chaos in the lives of residents from one end of the county to the other, but it's also been traumatic for our pets. One local group has been instrumental in helping out people and pets who may have been evacuated and may not have had any place to go. Elizabeth Orrick is the senior manager of community engagement with Best Friends Animal Society. She's here to talk a little bit about what I just talked about, which is how do we deal with our pets when we have a crisis like a fire, like the fire that we had here. And I guess the first thought is, what is the plight of an evacuated pet?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're talking about this because we live in LA. We are at risk of so many natural disasters, wildfires, mudslides, earthquakes. And we think about having a go bag for ourselves, having an emergency plan, having an evacuation plan, but we don't always think about our pets, and they need those things too. And so having all of those preparations in mind before you need them is really key to having a safe outcome for pets and people in a crisis like the one we just experienced.
There was something your organization did going to Utah to try to help with this situation. What was it?
So we, as soon as the fires started, we immediately cleared out the population of dogs and cats that we had on site at our life-saving center in West LA. And we, not only because we thought we might have to evacuate ourselves, we were very close to the Palisades fire. We could see the flames from our center. But we also wanted to make space for animals to come in from the shelters so that they could make space for animals impacted. And one of the ways that we did that is to transport dogs and cats that were already in the shelters before the fire started on planes, on vans, just trying to get them to a safe place so that the shelters would have the capacity and the space to treat animals impacted by the fires.
And that's some of what we're seeing in this video right here.
Correct.
And this happened when?
All of this happened within the span of 3.5 weeks. So we did several flight transports,
right,
like the one that you saw. We did ground transports. We partnered with Wings of Rescue, which is an amazing organization.
Coalition.
We partnered, yes.
Yeah, what kind of numbers are you talking about here?
Well, we impacted 1,700 animals that were in the shelters, in local LA shelters, and got them to safety through transports, through pulling them directly into our care, getting them into foster homes, getting them into adoptive homes, as well as offering monetary stipends to our partner groups so that they could pull animals from the shelters as well.
So let's talk about ones that were displaced.
Mm-hmm.
Some that may not even be here anymore. And people are worried, and they're wondering, and they're crying, and they're, you know.
Yeah, it's a scary time. I mean, pets are our family, and it's devastating to think about a pet having been displaced or having succumbed to a disaster like this, and that's why being prepared is so important. Our emergency rescue team is out setting cameras, setting humane traps, so that they can hopefully reunite lost or displaced pets with their families or provide medical care to pets that may be injured from
and
the fires.
Some of the most dramatic video I remember seeing was the horses. The horses coming through the smoke and the flames and the background. It was just, you know, you just had
it's heartbreaking. Sort
of, yeah, you had to feel for them.
Yeah,
because
wildfires,
some animal senses are much keener than ours.
That's right. And wildfires don't discriminate. So dogs and cats, community cats that live in neighborhoods and are used to free roaming outdoors, coyote, deer, hawks, owls, bunnies, all the things that make LA such an amazing, diverse community, they are all at risk, as well as all of the people that have lost their homes or been displaced. And it's heartbreaking and devastating, and we're doing everything that we can to keep those families together and reunite as many people with their pets as we can.
I really hesitate to say this, but this is probably not the last fire.
Oh, certainly
not. And so let's tell people what they can do if they're in a position where they have to grab their dog, their cat, whatever, and evacuate. And we have a little prop here. This is a go bag. Okay. Put it over this way. And so let's say this is a My Goat bag mm-hmm. for my little baby Lila.
Okay.
Okay. She'd fit just about in there. What should go in there?
So you want to have at least 3 to 5 days worth of food, medications, dry food, wet food, whatever your pet is used to eating.
Food.
There you go.
Okay.
A bowl, treats, water is important.
Favorite toys.
Right. Always things that are familiar are going to help your pet be at ease in a crisis situation. So even taking an article of clothing or a blanket that has your scent on it or your animal scent on it, putting that in there as well, that will help the pet feel more comfortable in this situation. You also want to have a copy of vaccination records, a spay and neuter certificate for your animal if you have to evacuate to someplace that requires an animal to be spayed or neutered. You want to make sure that your pet has a collar with identification tag and or a microchip with your current cell phone number registered to it, a copy of your vet's phone number, all the things that you don't want to have to be scrambling for in an emergency.
Fire departments tell us we're supposed to have go bags.
Exactly.
Why not for the pets?
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, they are part of your family. You need basically the same things in your go bag as your pet's go bag. We also recommend that having the crate already set up, lined with the blanket, having the food, the treats, the toys in there, and then also bring a few extra blankets or a sheet to cover the crate, because in the case of a wildfire, that will help prevent smoke inhalation and also keep the pet quiet and safe and not having to see all of the trauma going on.
Very quickly, website?
Bestfriends.org.
All right. Elizabeth Ork, thanks so much for joining us. Fox 11 News in Depth will continue right after this break.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in Depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.